We're live in the studio at the Bob Davis Podcasts. Usually I do this on Friday morning, and I got way behind this week, so I'm doing this at 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning, just watching some Netflix and having a great time, and throwing up the Bob Davis Podcast radio show number 42. So it's Labor Day weekend. You know, if you're heading up to the lake Saturday morning, this is good. It's good thought-provoking stuff for the trip up to the lake or the trip home from the lake. If you are taking Monday off, I am also going to take some time off. So this is going to be the last podcast until the middle of next week. So I'm going to take some time off, and I'm actually pretty excited about that. So let's roll segment one of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show number 42, podcast 545. Back to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit the bobdavispodcasts.com. This is a difficult time for me and a difficult show for me to do, because as the weeks toward election 2016 progress, I find the process getting more and more distasteful. And to make things worse, I really don't feel a desire to add to the noise. And that is what it is right now. You have an entire media space full of commentator after commentator picking a side and spending all of their time telling you why their side is going to win and why the other side should be in jail or is a fascist. And no, it doesn't matter which candidate you're talking about. They both do it. They all do it. You know, it's consistent and it's everywhere. If you're on the air these days, what you're supposed to do is emanate confidence, and you're supposed to be upbeat about the chances for your end of the political spectrum, and you're supposed to be cheerleading. The airwaves, newspapers, cable news channels, social media, YouTube, whatever, are full of speculators at best, charlatans at worst, selling you their propaganda of the future. So-called journalism is nothing more than dueling advocates in broadcast, print, and online. And as I have often warned, storylines are cast out, followed until they play out and collapse, and then the process starts all over again. It is either you can look at it this way and say it's Orwellian, or you can look at it and say it reminds me, and it does, of the end of the 1970s when something called AM Top 40 radio began to die, and you had these once great radio stations that were characterized by playing the same tired, really bad pop records over and over and over again, and screaming DJs and tired, worn-out jingles, forcing thousands of listeners to adapt to FM radio much more quickly. So American politics is in the same boat as dying AM Top 40 radio back in the day. Yet there doesn't seem to be any place for those of us who are tired of it, who see this, to adapt to yet. Each new major policy speech, and I put quotes around that, each effort to, quote, reinvigorate a failed campaign strategy or candidate provokes the same tired responses, the same tired storylines, the same predictions from the same hoary pundits. It doesn't matter who you listen to or what you watch, they're all doing it, and I want to try to be different. Every one of these people is telling you who to vote for. They're all telling you how to vote. We're well past the point where there should be any expectations of issue reporting so that voters understand the contours of a particular issue. I've talked about that, like the economy or illegal immigration and how to fix it, or foreign trade or the wars in the Middle East, or any a number of the other complex problems facing this country and, by extension, the world. In what has to be, for example, the most craven attempt at maintaining favor and relevance since the Borgia popes, Pope Francis this week called denial of global warming a sin and suggested those of you who have committed it can wash themselves clean of this sin by carpooling. It's ridiculous. And yet the media talks about Donald Trump's flights of fancy when it comes to rhetoric. Last week on this show, I detailed the state-by-state polls and the challenges for both mainline candidates as we hit the Labor Day mark for the presidential elections. A lot has been made this week about national polls, national polls showing a change in the leadership in the race. One of those polls, which has been getting so many headlines and talk, was based on a sample of just 1,000 people. 1,000 people for a country of 350 million. And every major news organization is talking about this single poll as though it signifies some real movement in the presidential race because it supports a storyline. As I told you last week, this is going to be a state-by-state electoral affair. And until state polls begin to change appreciably in Florida, Ohio, Georgia, Missouri, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Hampshire, Colorado, North and South Carolina, and a few other states, the race is not moving one way or another. New polls suggest that, yeah, in some of those states, and I'm talking about new state-by-state polls, those races may be tightening, but not enough to break the state-by-state averages for Democrats set back in 2012 by Barack Obama when he won re-election. So looking at state-by-state polls every day is unnecessary. And besides, actually, you can do it yourself if you have the inclination. I will do another look at the state-by-state polls at the end of September, and we're going to see where we are. But in the meantime, and even then, I will not engage in the silliness of putting percentage figures on the chances of one candidate to win or another. This is not a gambling hall. I refuse to tell you conclusively what is going to happen because I don't know what's going to happen, and neither do you, and neither does anyone else, no matter what they say. These people on television are nothing more than amateur tarot card readers. There's no difference between them and people on the street having conversations about who's going to win and why. Any prediction is as good as any other, because there's a 50% chance you are going to be right. So if you're on television, those are pretty good odds if that's what you do, make money by making ridiculous predictions that turn out to be wrong, because I've done that. And yes, I am disgusted by this whole process. So in this show, I'm going to do three new segments of new content, and then I'm going to have one segment at the end here of the show, which is a throwback to the Minnesota State Fair over 30 years ago. Just plain fun. I'll tell you about that later. So it was announced this week that the U.S. public deficit is now $19 trillion, and yet both mainline candidates propose spending hundreds of billions more on their favorite programs, whether it is free college and health care for veterans or a beautiful wall on the border. Do you see what I'm saying? Both mainline candidates will increase the size, scope, and power of government. Another story this week in the financial media had people buzzing about a new study which shows federal, state, and municipal worker pensions are underfunded and in danger of default. Now, for Minnesotans, while you bask in the glory of a taxpayer-funded $1.5 billion football stadium in Minneapolis, a stadium the team's owners could have written a check for, you should know one of the cities most in danger of its budget being swamped by underfunded city worker pensions is Minneapolis. But the media and the candidates continue to flog the issues that animate their fans. That's what they are, fans, not even necessarily voters. And they say things like, don't worry, better education and health care will pay for itself. Oh, forget the budget. The drug cartel money seizures will be used to pay for the wall. And of course, if that was true, why don't we just use them now to pay down the deficit? Or money is cheap right now because interest rates are low, so we should be borrowing to build infrastructure because we're actually getting a better deal. If we don't do this, we're going to lose our federal funding. That's my favorite. Plus all the millions we've already put into the project of taxpayer dollars. These people are supposed to be leaders, and they are selling, continue to sell the idea that their policies will result in a bigger economy, so we don't have to worry about spending more money because we're going to make government work better for you, for America. And it's nonsense. Unfortunately, you don't have any other choice but to pick one or two of the purveyors of this nonsense. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, yet another perfect example of how these government agencies do whatever they want with taxpayer dollars and why we need to take their power to do this away permanently. In this show, I'm going to talk about the Southwest Light Rail Project in Minneapolis and St. Paul, which, despite a lawsuit from some of the richest and most liberal Minneapolis residents and the refusal of the Minnesota House to fund it, is now back on the front burner. Why? Because we've already spent $140 million on it for pretty pictures. pictures of trains and trees and lakes, and if we don't approve it with financial subterfuge, we're going to lose the federal funding. That's why. So in this show, I'm going to tell you what I think the real problem is, and then we're going to end the show with something fun, something that will take you back to the 1980s, when the Minnesota State Fair was still an actual agricultural confab and not a food fair with rides. So coming up, how an unelected body in Minnesota pushed through funding on their own for a project nobody wants. Next. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. To hear more of The Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com and thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Back in the studio, just ahead of segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, which is radio show number 42. This is getting to be the time of the year after Labor Day when companies start thinking about team building exercises. And, you know, some people spend all day in conference rooms with the cold coffee and the whiteboard. That was one of my favorites, you know, 9:30 in the morning and you can barely hold your eyes open. Or they take you to some cliff somewhere for rope climbing, whitewater rafting, rappelling down the cliff, walking across coals. You might get a trip to Hawaii out of that one. But these things, these crazy things, are great for the company athlete or for the people that are super organized. But if you're not that guy, it's not so good. The other thing is that today we are living in a world with a much more diverse workplace. And so team building exercises have taken on kind of a new look. If you're the person who has to plan these things, so listen up, I'm going to tell you about it. I'm going to tell you how to book a great new, sophisticated, and fun way to bond with employees and clients at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed social setting. You go to brushstudio.net or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. There's a video there that shows what people are doing. People have a great time as an artist guides your team through the featured painting step by step. It is a real painting. It is not paint by numbers. You do not have to have artistic experience. The whole point here is that people on your team get to work together and bond, and they don't have to sit in the hotel conference room, and they don't have to, you know, walk across coals or rappel down a cliff. Brush Studio events are designed for left brain people to bring out the right brain, and that means ideas. And again, for a diverse workplace, it's a great thing. It's so much better than spending all day in the conference room with the cold coffee. Room for 55 people plus catering from Crave in the Western. It's actually a beautiful place. Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. They also do catering from Crave in the West End, as I said, so everybody's going to have something to eat, and they're going to have a great time. Here's what you do. Again, check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. Visit brushstudio.net or reach out to Brush Studio at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show number 42. Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Like most major market metropolitan areas and some slightly smaller, Minneapolis and St. Paul have become enthralled with trains. Back in the day, Governor Jesse Ventura was going to clean up government for good, but he ended his single term getting virtually nothing done except for introducing light rail to the city of Minneapolis. Now there are several light rail lines proposed for the city. Two of them have been built. All are pushed by a council of dark overlords called the Metropolitan Council and their henchmen at the local newspaper and in the state government. The unelected Metropolitan Council in Minneapolis and St. Paul has absolute authority over towns and villages and cities in several of the state's metropolitan counties. True, towns and cities by statute cannot refuse a request or say no to the hated and feared Metropolitan Council. The Met Council, which started as an authority to decide water and sewer planning, today has its own police force, they have their own engineering staff, they have their own planning staff, and now apparently their own bonding authority. It is a legislature that is unelected. In its zeal to build the Southwest Rail, despite intense opposition from the richest and most liberal communities in Minneapolis, and after state representatives who are elected to make these kinds of decisions decided not to fund the project, the Met Council went ahead with the governor's approval and issued more than $100 million of debt on its own this week, and is asking counties in the Minneapolis and St. Paul Metro to kick in tens of millions of dollars more, and they are acceding to that request. The response from state Republicans? Let's put out videos on Facebook detailing the same tired arguments against light rail, arguments that have failed to stop these projects since Governor Ressler greenlighted the fabled Hiawatha line. Now, a few weeks ago, I did a podcast with a local mayor who has figured out how to stop the Met Council. He tells subscribers to my podcast how. He is telling anyone who wants to know how. Nobody cares. Because Minnesota Republicans, wink, wink, nod, nod, are just as duplicitous in this as Minnesota Democrats, including Governor Dayton. Forget the usual hand-wringing about how the Met Council will have to lay off engineering staff or how they've already spent some $140 million on the project to pay consulting firms to draw pictures with trees and bushes and hold public meetings where they tell us what's good for us. Forget the usual nonsense from legislators on both sides of the aisle talking about how if we don't approve this, we're going to lose federal funding and we wouldn't want that. I mean, if it's being offered, why not take it? Actually, don't forget that, because Republican or Democrat in this state, these Babbitts just cannot say no to more money from the federal government. These projects are really good for the community, and they create jobs, and they make things better, right? Where does federal and state funding come from? Your wallet. These smooth-talking snake oil salesmen have people convinced this miraculous source of money from the federal government comes from a tree somewhere that doesn't include picking your coffers clean. Or they are so incompetent, they did not anticipate the Met Council would do an end run over the body Minnesotans elect to decide these issues, the House of Representatives. Meanwhile, we have new data that shows major companies and wealthy residents leaving Minnesota in droves, primarily because of the tax rate. And it's not just the state tax. It's also municipal taxes. Remember the power of denial. Minnesota is a wonderful place to live. Just look at our subsidized apartment buildings downtown and our subsidized stadiums. How could you leave all of this beautiful stuff? They won't leave. Well, they're leaving. Did none of these Republicans in the House, including the much vaunted Republican Speaker of the House, Kurt Dowd, think about how to actually stop the Met Council? Again, back to the local mayor, who is probably paid less than the speaker's phone bill, you simply change the statutes passed way back in the early 90s that make it impossible for towns and cities to say no to the Met Council. Then you legally empower towns and cities to say no to the Met Council's triumphalist visions for the future of the cities. You take away their dictatorial powers, and then you stop funding the mechanisms of their power. You take away the police force, you stop funding the staff, you get rid of the engineering, you take away the new chairs and the computers they buy every year, you pass laws that make it impossible for them to seek any other funding than that provided by the legislature, and you refuse to fund any more light rail projects. Keep in mind, the commissioners are getting paid six-figure salaries, and you demand the state's Republican congressional delegation vote against any new transportation funding at the federal level until light rail projects are taken out of the mix. Are the Republicans doing that? Are they even advocating for that? No, they're not. Is the state party advocating something along these lines? Absolutely not. The Minnesota GOP is struggling to pay off its debt, and they can't even properly choose a slate of electors on the outside chance that a Republican presidential candidate would win in this state, which he would do without the help of the Minnesota GOP. I can tell you that. So will they do this? Will they kill the Met Council's authority? No, because the GOP in Minnesota is just as interested in getting a piece of these projects, whether it's light rail or the wall that their precious presidential candidates promise to build. Despite $19 trillion in debt, despite unfunded liabilities and non-discretionary spending rising at an alarming rate, despite city pensions engulfing city budgets, and not just Minneapolis and St. Paul, but suburbs as well, and that forces them to raise taxes, property taxes, and what do they always say? Well, it's just the cost of a pizza every year for everyone, but they don't talk about the percentage increases. These guys just keep on trying to make government work better for you. Really, what they're doing is make it work better for them. Now, there are people who enjoy the baubles that they create to buy you off at enormous cost, by the way. The stadiums, the wind power, the bike trails, the soccer fields, the special subsidies for developers, the entertainment functions of government, the corruption, legal and illegal, that is everywhere in our state and in our country. That is the corruption I call statism. Statism is the enemy of freedom. It comes wearing a red tie. It comes wearing a blue tie. It's still statism. Whether it is the so-called rich and successful businessman or the opportunistic former first lady and their minions. Statism thrives on the misallocation of resources, projects that enrich those closest to the halls of power, and the money printing never live up to the promises they use to sell them to you, or they just force them through. And what do? We just keep on endorsing and nominating and electing them, whether they have a D or an R in front of their names. Our public debt is at 120% of the U.S. GDP, higher when you consider municipal and state debts. Remember bonding for every little project in the state to ensure re-election. This is one of the most important issues this year, and neither candidate has mentioned it. More spending and more building to stimulate the economy, even though Barack Obama spent nearly $1 trillion and the U.S. economy has failed to grow beyond 2% or so annually for the last 8 or more years. But that doesn't stop them from offering a grab bag of so-called policy ideas that amount to more candy for the juiced in. The wall, free education, free health care, more war. And neither one of the presidential candidates has barely mentioned it, and neither one of the presidential candidates or Congress is going to do a damn thing about it. Coming up, the truth is you're being hoodwinked on an epic scale this year. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show.
This transmission is coming to you. This transmission is coming to you.
You've got it.
This transmission is coming to you. This transmission is coming to you.
You've got it.
Well, we're just ahead of the third segment for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, and I talk a lot about what I do for exercise. I talk a lot about practicing yoga in crowded rooms, 105 degrees and 40% humidity, a lot of sweating, or this, you know, the yoga sculpts, those type of things. Now, I took the day off today, but I plan to hit it again tomorrow. And one of the things that I do is I drink something called Hydrus. It is a new high-performance beverage that uses exclusive nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed and effectiveness to your muscles into your bloodstream without the sugar in traditional sports drinks. The whole thing about Hydrus is it helps me take it to the edge because you are fully hydrated as you are exercising. You don't have to wait for it. One of the things that they've discovered in doing research is that if you drink a lot of water before some kind of exercise, whatever it is, whether it's CrossFit or lifting or cycling or competitive sports, you don't really get fully hydrated for half an hour to 45 minutes. Hydrus works really, really fast. And it does help you take it to the edge because you're fully hydrated, and that's what it's all about. Join the performance hydration revolution. Find out more about Hydrus at HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com, or click on the banners at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. Get some. I love orange. They got two flavors. Check it out. HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com. HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com. All right, here is segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, also visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Usually this show features content from my podcasts, and of course, coming up in the final segment of this show, I'm going to do just that. But right now, things are moving along too quickly for me not to point out or make mention of some of the things that are happening, because I think the American people are being hoodwinked on an epic scale. It doesn't matter whether you are for candidate Y or candidate X. With politics covered as sport, the discussion centers on the latest outrage. Meanwhile, the power of governments are at the root of our national disorder. This question of the power of federal governments and state governments and how to take that power away from them permanently. What am I talking about? The power of government health insurance to decide how we are treated. The power of governments to read our emails and examine our financial records without our permission, or to spy on all our communications without our permission. The power of poorly managed yet militarized police forces running amok all over this country. The power of presidents to start wars without the permission of Congress. The power to tax your earnings, your savings, what you leave your children, all the way down to additional sales taxes and property taxes to pay for either their financial mismanagement or to add to their so-called rainy day fund. The power to inject funds loaned for free to banks so it can be reinvested in the stock markets rather than loaned to Main Street businesses so they can grow and create jobs in your town. The power to monetize the groaning national debt with another unelected body of technocrats who have no idea what they're doing, more or less. Meanwhile, legislative bodies all over this country and in Washington continue to spend and tax more and more, spend and tax, spend and tax. The power to make trade agreements and treat without the constitutionally required consent of legislatures. The power to buy off our enemies with hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. The executive power to do things without the consent of Congress. The power to build a train running through your neighborhood, whether you want it or not, and especially if you don't. Do I have to go on? None of the candidates has pledged to do anything about government overreaches of power. They really don't talk about spending and debt. More of our rights are chipped away year after year in the name of helping us or in the name of solving a problem government itself created, both by state, federal, and local governments. And the founders of this country, the people that were the leaders in the time of the revolution, as well as the people who lived in this country at the time of the revolution, revolted against the monarch of England and all monarchy for doing less than what these people are doing. Neither mainline presidential candidate is going to do anything about this because they are not going to preside over a reduction of the power of the government, particularly of the office that one of them is about to take. The thing we need to study, whether we are a conservative or liberal, so-called, is how to take away the power of government to have this kind of control in our lives permanently. Now, I'm not talking about disbanding the fire department and the police. I'm not talking about eliminating the government or some antebellum states' rights fantasy. I'm talking about focusing on the work of bringing these governments to heel, bringing these governments back to the idea of service to the people by reducing their power permanently. Republicans? Well, in this state, they could eliminate the power of the Metropolitan Council. They could have. They could do it right now. For example, by amending the statutes governing the council's operation. Well, they fixed the council recently, supposedly. What did they do? They passed a law staggering the terms of office and rearranged some of the authority, but they did not challenge the overall authority of the council because they do not want to rock the boat. You know, they want to live to fight another day and all that, but they never fight. They just go on taxing and spending and adding to the power of the state. And they do this at the federal level. They do it at the state level. They do it at the local level. I asked this week in two different podcasts whether we are ready for real change. I asked how we define ourselves as human beings in one podcast, and then I asked in another one whether we are ready for what's next. Are we ready to start working for real change in this country and the world? Are we the generation able to manage the change that is certainly coming? Are we the stewards of this change for the future generation? Some of this change based on technology is significant. It is real. It will reverberate for decades to come. If we leave it to the charlatans in our capitals, we may not see a new age and the dynamic new economy it promises for generations. And we are not going to get there promising free education and health insurance. And we won't get there walling ourselves off from the rest of the world. The economy in a free country with a free market system is the people. It is a force of nature, and government gets in the way of that force of nature. So there's really only one question on the table. Are we ready to start the long and difficult slog to take the power from these governments permanently? And I think whether we are ready is an important question, because for some it means giving up our shiny stadiums or pretty trains, and it means giving up the bike trails and the ethanol subsidies and the wind power subsidies. It means ending the ability of the government to manipulate us with tax policy and free handouts for the right behavior, whether it's the federal government, the state government, or local governments. Do you have the courage to be free? Do you actually want to be free? And I want to ask the same question of myself. Or do we harbor a secret desire to just have somebody else handle the complexities of these decisions while we argue about whether somebody should be in prison or whether someone's a crazy person or a racist? Maybe we're not strong enough to resist this or change our world in a meaningful way. Maybe we want the smiling local politician that thinks everything's a joke, and as long as you love God and people, you're okay, while you keep voting for more and more spending and piling on debt. And don't expect it to get addressed in this election, because nobody's talking about it, really. Both parties nominated establishment politicians, yes, they did, who are committed to keeping those who put them there in power. They may talk a good game, at least on one side of the political spectrum, really, but they're not going to upset the apple cart. Sorry to interrupt the reverie, but this election is a bust as far as talking about issues is concerned. The real work has to be done from the ground up, and it hasn't been done. The liberty movement in this country is dying. The conservative movement in this country is dying. There's no philosophy to propel a movement on the horizon. The language just isn't there. Conservatives, and I use the term lightly, are just too busy having the government build a wall. Liberals are too busy taxing rich people to pay for college. And nobody wants to do the work to build the kinds of movements that predicate real change. So guess what? The Koch brothers and the Chambers of Italian Fascism and George Soros and the Clinton Foundation are going to do it for us. And they're all in it together. And so, no, I will not be telling you who to vote for, because I wouldn't vote for any of them to be dog catcher. And I am not going to participate in arguments about things that have nothing to do with the core issue, which is government power and getting rid of it permanently. We've all heard the maxim, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, what do you define as absolute power? The power to tax, to build, to treat, to start wars, to pay off leaders of corrupt governments, to come into your house, to monitor your communications? Wherever you are on the political spectrum, there's an example of government overreach. It's just everywhere. If absolute power corrupts absolutely, have we not reached that point in our society on so many levels? These are good questions to ask, and it's a starting point to talk about after January of 2017, because at this point, this election is on autopilot. There's no point in talking about these things in this election cycle, because none of the candidates are going to address these issues. And I think that this is a conversation that starts after the election, and I think it's a conversation that is ongoing in an effort to build organizations that will reasonably reduce the power of government. We're not getting that done, and we're certainly not seeing national candidates advocate that. Certainly the Democrats are not going to reduce the power of government, and the Republicans aren't either. So it's left to us now for the future to try to figure out how to get this done. Coming up, so the state fair used to be more than one opportunity after another to stuff your face. Next. To hear all the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. I think my fears come. back in the studio just ahead of segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. The cool thing about this show is it's brand new content because I really didn't feel like excerpting the two podcasts I did this week. I mentioned them in this show, but I really didn't feel like excerpting them because they were pretty big, heavy topics, and they don't really fit into the radio format. So I refer to them in this podcast, but this is new content. So the next part of this is going to be not new content. If you haven't heard it for a while, it is the montage I did, really a podcast from the State Fair in 1983, I think it was. And I love this because it shows how much the fair has changed, and it shows by audio how much we have changed. And I just love this segment coming up. Once again, thanks to HydrusPerformance.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast all these months. I practice yoga in crowded rooms. I'm able to take it to the edge. It doesn't matter if you do cycling, CrossFit, lifting, or competitive sports. Hydrus Performance is a new high-performance beverage that gets your muscles hydrated, gets critical electrolytes into your muscles very quickly, and it helps us take it to the edge, actually. Join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com. Check them out and get some Hydrus today. Also, thanks to Brush Studio in the West End. For you people that are planning team building exercises, you're going to be amazed at what Brush Studio can do for your team. I mentioned that we have a very diverse workforce these days, and the old things that we used to do in Minnesota to build teams don't work as well anymore. You owe it to yourself if you plan these events for big or small companies to check out Brush Studio. Check them out online at brushstudio.net. It shows what they do, or you can call them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. They got 22 different brands of beer and an extensive wine collection, and your guys will come away really feeling great and having a great time. So check out brushstudio.net, and thanks you guys for sponsoring the BobDavisPodcasts.com. And of course, pilots, if you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, don't forget Alpha Systems. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. What is angle of attack? It is nothing more than lift. It's what keeps the airplane in the air, and it is critical when you're going to make the final turn to land. General aviation is rife with problems with pilots not having enough lift when they make the final turn to the runway. Basically, it is a visual indicator of the lift that keeps your airplane in the air, and it saves lives. Remember, Alpha Systems, AOA, they have the best visual indicator in the business. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page for more info. And thanks, Alpha, for being the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcasts. Here we go with segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show, number 42. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome. Well, I'm from Chicago, and I never encountered anything like the Minnesota State Fair as a kid. So a long time ago, as a young employee of a local TV station, I had the opportunity to experience the Minnesota State Fair, a true agricultural convention as it was, not what it has become. When I worked out there for 10 days, 10 hours a day, and I loved it, and I couldn't get enough of it. And I recorded it with my friends Ted Goldbuff and, of course, Alan Searle. I play this montage from the 1983 Minnesota State Fair every year on the podcasts, and every year it just amazes me, both for what it used to be at the fair and versus what it has become, and how much we have changed since then. If you listen to the voices of the people, the way we talk and how we talk has changed. So to celebrate the State Fair and Labor Day weekend, here is the great Lost Minnesota State Fair podcast from about 1983.
Want to say for some more people to come out here and play some games and have a good time and everyone wins some prizes. And that's how it should be at the state fair.
You ought to try it. It's only a quarter.
One diamond.
I guess so. It's been a couple years since I've been out, but I plan being back next year. Well, being the largest, it's one of the largest in the United States, which I find interesting.
Well, I've only had one corn dog, and I think it's all right.
I'd never eat a hamburger here.
I loved it to death. I just loved every single minute of it. I come here every year, and every year I see something new. I just love it.
I'll tell you, the way people act around this place is pitiful. They'll kill for a parking space. They should get some new rides out here, some fantastic rides that, you know, upside down and round, you know?
Right now, I'm really disappointed because we've had a lot of big loss. And otherwise, you know, St. Paul's great. People are nice. It's just that sometimes kids get rowdy and start ripping off.
Minnesota's always the best. I played Dallas, Oak City, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Jackson, Mississippi.
Hey, young lady, we let the ladies shoot over here. If you can shoot as good as you look, you'll win. Come on in.
Get a lot of hard times, but they're all right.
Want to give me an example?
What's that?
Of some barking?
You want some of that?
Yeah.
Hey, it's only a dollar today, a dollar to play. Choice today, choice to stay. That's right. Hit them and get them right here. It's just like making love. You got to get it up to get it in right here. Who's going to be next?
Hey, one dime in. You win here. Who's next? Well, one in the dish. You win here. Get one. Who's next? Benjamin, win them out here. Get one. Do it now. One dime, one time. Right here, go ahead. Who's next? Get one. Well, get some change. You get in the game now. Who's next? Pitch him in, win him out. Here, come in, get one. Hey, get some change. You get in the game now. One dime in the dish. You win. Here, get one.
That varies depending upon how busy we are. Slow days, we have 30, 35 winners. On the weekends, 80, 90.
Can you tell me what the purpose is, what the object is?
To take a dime and throw it out there and make it stay in one of them dishes.
Looks easy.
It looks easy. If you know how to do it, it is easy. We have some guys that come down here every day and win one.
Oh, how are you at it?
I ain't been practicing this year. I've been pretty rusty. Too busy working.
Yeah, that implies you've been doing this for a while.
Oh, I've been out here for 20 years.
Where are you from?
Originally from Milwaukee, but now I'm from Tampa, Florida.
Tell me about your day a little bit.
Well, that's a long, long thing. You get up, come out here, open up the joint, get everybody working. Work for 5 or 6 hours, you get a break, run, get a bite to eat, come back. Work 5 or 6 more hours, get another break, come back and work. It's the same thing for, well, this fair we go from like 9:30 in the morning until 12:30. So we go 15, 16 hours a day.
Sounds tough. Why do you do it?
Well, I like to travel. I got into it 20 years ago, and I guess it's in my blood now. I just keep right on doing it.
Hey, right here, do it now. You need change. We got change here. Pitch them in and win them out. Get one. One dime in the dish. You win here. Get one. Hit it. Get it. Do it here. Who's next? A dime in the dish. You win here. Get one. Hey, change right over there now. Pitch them in and win them out. Who's next? One dime in the dish. You win here. Get one.
What truths did you learn in your lifetime doing this kind of work?
Well, I found show people at show business, whether it's this or the circus or the theater, I've been in all of them. We are closer people. We are a different type of people. Now, I'm not talking about show people that come in latecomers that are stars overnight. I mean the old showmen. It's a tight family. And the outside people, which is the public, we find them different than we are. We're just a different class of people. And we know more about life than the ordinary person that goes to work 8 hours a day and goes home has the same routine. Our life is exciting every day. Here we get up at 7, we go to bed at 2 or 3. We don't have any time. Our working season constitutes 14 hours a day work, hard 6 months of work. Then the next 6 months, why, you have to save enough money to live the next off season. Like a farmer or anything else. I can stay home and make a wonderful living.
But you love this too much.
Well, I love both. My wife loved this more than I do. I've come to the time of life where I'd like to stay home, stay in my studio and paint, which won't be long.
Happy Labor Day weekend. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Ready to have some fun for the next few days and just relax, and I hope that you are doing the same thing. Thanks for listening to all the Bob Davis podcasts at thebobdavispodcasts.com, as well as the radio shows, which I also post at thebobdavispodcasts.com because they are in clean, clear digital sound. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com. Very quickly, somebody asked me this week, because Stitcher.com and some of these other services like blogtalkradio.com inserts ads into the content that we provide them. iTunes does not do that. When you click on iTunes and you subscribe at iTunes, you get the podcast without any inserted ads other than the ones that I do, which I try to weave into the content. So don't forget that. And of course, thanks for liking and sharing the podcast and commenting on the podcast, especially on iTunes. I really appreciate the comments. Thanks for signing up for the Bob Line newsletter, and thanks for your donations to the Bob Davis Podcast Mobile Podcast Command Unit. going out soon at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 545, this week's radio show number 42. Thanks for listening to the show on GCNLive.com and also in Minneapolis on the Patriot at 11 p.m. on Sundays. That's why it's posted online, so you can hear it if you aren't in the audience of that particular radio station. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. Back to Netflix. Bye-bye.